Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the May 17 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Chip Dillinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Jackie Vakes is here from Stuart Peterson, as well as Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. Let's start with you, Chip. It's been kind of an interesting week. Can you summarize what it's looked like to this point on a Thursday afternoon?
Yeah, pretty choppy, actually. You know, not a lot of volume or big ranges in corn. It's holding firm. Had a little bit of a setback today. On Thursday, wheat, a little bit of a bounce off of support. They beat wheat up pretty badly late last week and into the beginning of this week. Got to a little minor support area, so we had a little bounce in wheat. And probably the biggest thing here is just a lot of nervousness around these trade agreements. China and the United States in talks right now in Washington. Also, the fact that we haven't gotten NAFTA figured out, really putting a lot of pressure on the bean market. And I think that's starting to be a little bit of a fear in the corn market's mind as well.
Kurt, the last time we had you on, which is a week ago, I believe, you said, mentioned that wheat needs to lead sometimes, or at least that's what we hear. Wheat's had not such a bad week, but it's a rough crop in the United States.
Well, I've been listening to your Friday analyst, Mike, and that's what he's been telling me for the last 2 years, and I think it's hopefully going to start taking over here, and somebody's got to take leadership. But basically, wheat's been the short side of the spread. They've been long bean, short wheat, long corn, short wheat, long the Dow, short wheat. And we've seen some unwinding take place. The speculative wheat position on the short side's just maybe 10,000 contracts now. But what we've seen, too, is that the world wheat fundamentals are turning a little bit positive. We're seeing some weather problems in Canada, the Black Sea region hit and miss there. Australia could be a concern. Then also, too, we saw wheat come down to some critical trend line yield, trend line points, and also some major retracement levels and kind of held. They've unwound the long position, moved it into corn and wheat. So we just need to see some wheat business surface, which is going to be hard for the U.S. because the Black Sea continues to dominate that market.
The Black Sea has dominated that market for a while. After the fall of the Soviet Union, not a lot happening there, of course, but it's been a long time ago, and political things have changed across the planet over the last 40 years, Jackie Vakes.
Well, there's no question about the fact that things have changed over the planet. I think one of the things I found interesting today was export sales. And the fact that when you looked at export sales, we saw decent sales, but not outstanding sales, and primarily because unknown was switching sales to like Japan, to Mexico, both in the corn and the bean market. And therefore, we lost some of those sales. Now, we've seen China do this before. You know, the Chinese yuan does not fluctuate like the U.S. dollar does. So they'll buy from us as unknown, turn around and sell it for a cheaper price to, like, Japan and Mexico when the dollar starts to rise. And so this wasn't really a very big surprise. I think the other thing is when you look at inspections, you know, China only took beans out of the Pacific Northwest this week. They didn't take them out of anywhere else. And so that's concerning to me from that standpoint. And I think it goes back to what Chip said. There's a lot of concern about what's going to happen with these trade talks and where it's finally going to end up.
Do you think we have any hope of actually making USDA's number?
Oh, my goodness. You know my answer to this. I disagreed with them when they went on old crop to 2.225 billion bushels, and no, I don't think we have a good chance. I looked again today at rail inspections to date, as well as straight export port inspections. We've got to ship almost 60 million bushels a week on corn. We've got to ship about 36 million bushels a week on beans to be able to make where they're at. And so maybe we can do it. You really don't know. But if we have another few weeks of a lot of changes and a lot of inspections, a lot of sales being switched out, it's going to be very, very interesting to see how they come up with those numbers. So I'm expecting on the next USDA report we might see a pullback on old crop. export sales.
USDA has been really confident about the export market, corn and soybeans. That shows up in both the old and new crop. Especially for the new crop, do you think we can get there, Wayne Nelson?
Well, I think, you know, number one, as far as the export expectations for next year in beans, it's going to depend a lot on whether China and the U.S. can get together on this no tariffs and hurting things. Because if we're going to the secondary markets, they're not near as aggressive in taking, you know, it's going to be piecemeal here, piecemeal there, piecemeal here. We might sell the beans, but I don't think it's going to be at the pace that we're talking about if we can get back with China. You know, as far as the corn, you know, we're looking at a lot of the corn in South America isn't shipping out very fast. We're picking up those markets. We're hitting a lot of places. And as you look ahead to next year, China's going to be cutting back on their corn acres. They're going to be increasing their bean acres. They're going to run out of that big stocks of corn. That's why the world number has been dropping so much. And they're going to probably be needing to, if they're going to come to their 2020 ethanol mandates or their expectations, they're going to have to be sourcing corn from somewhere in the world. Will it be Russia? Will it be South America? If it's so, that opens up other markets for us, and our corn is going to be good. You know, you look ahead in Minnesota and North Dakota, they're already basically getting very close to their prevent plant in some of those areas. And if we get a lot of rain or cold weather up there for another week, we could see some prevent plant just going into Minnesota. Will they switch to beans or just take prevent plant? We don't know.
You couple all that Wayne has said with the idea that there are some dry areas, and I've checked with a couple of the meteorologists to make sure this is the case. It's probably kind of debatable in China whether the dry areas are having much of that of an impact yet. Liaoning, Jilin, a couple of other places, maybe. But these are, you know, high-producing northeastern part of China corn areas. I don't know. China's not really much of an importer of corn, but we do have the whole world market we have to play with. So does this give a boost to a corn market that looks like it has good demand going forward?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that has surprised me. Typically, once you get to about this point on the calendar, you see a setback in corn. But as Wayne mentioned, there's some problems in the northern portion of the Corn Belt, too wet. There's other areas here that are too dry. So absolutely, I think world weather, be it China, I think Brazil also, their second crop corn has been, there's a majority of that corn growing area hasn't received rainfall in over 50 days. Now they're on tap to get some rains, but absolutely, I think world weather, including ours, really is going to be closely watched by the corn market because it's different than we've seen the last year or two. When we were building stocks, we're now cutting stocks, and it's much more critical that we don't have a production problem or a hiccup anywhere in the world.
For the Southern Hemisphere last year, the word of the year was La Nina. Do we have a word of the year for the Northern Hemisphere, Wayne Nelson?
Well, it's Madoki El Nino, and we're, you know, that's when the water gets sandwiched, the cold in between here like that, and it's the start, basically, of El Nino. So, yes, we are watching the Madoki this year, and that's the word that these farmers want to hear this year to get our corn and bean prices working back up. So, just like La Nina was for us last year, it's Madoki El Nino.
All right, we'll say Madoki as often as we can, and we'll start to ask our meteorologist about that. We heard it first here on Commodity Week, and Eric Snodgrass, if you listen often enough, mentioned it last Friday on the closing market, right? Yeah, closing market report. So we'll see where that lands. However, you have a different weather source, Kurt.
Oh, yeah. My weather source has over 226 years of experience in Clear back last fall, in fact, clear back last September, it mapped out the whole pattern here. It's just falling in place. Now, all these other weather services are just now starting to catch on. And as we move through May, which is projected to be showery activity, which we've seen, once that calendar turns June 1, I'd be kind of cautious in through here because it's a warmer, drier trend.
You know, when you look at, I'll go back to what Chip said and to what Kurt said, you know, this warmer, drier trend and potentially the world worrying about the corn shortages. When they came out with the China information from the ministry, you know, they said that they cut their production, and if it would come true, it would put us at world-ending stocks levels, the tightest we've seen in 45 years, which is pretty amazing. And I think supporting us is the South American financial situation. When you look at Argentina, you know, Argentina's in terrible shape in general. A few weeks ago, they raised their prime interest rate to 40%. And, you know, they just are because the only commodities that they have that are priced off U.S. dollars are beans and corn, it's likely that they're going to hang on to them really, really tight, especially if the U.S. dollar continues to appreciate. So I think there are a lot of things at the moment that are going to support corn.
Chip, I want to talk about South America for just a second, and you can discuss second crop corn if you'd like in Brazil, where it stands today. The Argentine soybean crop appears to continue even to today, despite the fact they're mostly done, although harvest has been pretty tough with the wet weather there. Been really small because of the dry conditions. Bunge, I believe, today talked about maybe having to import more soybeans into Argentina. Of course, they've got a facility that's half broken at this point. There are two piers, and one of them is gone, not likely to come back. So there's just a lot happening in South America.
Yeah, there really is, and I think Jackie made a good point that, you know, with Argentina's financial issues, that crop, that bean crop, is probably going to continue to shrink. You know, the USDA is usually a little bit conservative on that. They're still dropping, so it wouldn't surprise me if they don't knock another 5-6 million tons off of that. It's a short crop. That changes the environment a little bit, and it just makes this China-U.S. thing much more important. If they get that figured out, you know, the demand numbers are high, but we might be able to get close to achieving them. So South America's huge. You know, the second crop corn in Brazil is very big as well. And that's harder. They have such a big area there, it's harder to get boots on the ground and really know where they're at. But you just look at the weather data. I looked at some this morning, and it just has not rained for the better part of 2 months. And so it's in my brain, it's impossible to think that they have a normal crop there and they're going to be hurt somewhat. Interestingly enough, though, both the United States and their own government still have that crop pretty decent size. So if they don't get rain soon down there, meaning probably the next 2-3 weeks, I would think that those production numbers are going to be in quick retreat.
Wayne Nelson, last time we had a short crop in South America, in Brazil, second crop, I think, was not last year but the year before. That gave us an opportunity to make really good sales in the United States.
It sure did, Todd. It carried us into, we took our great big stocks down, shipping stuff out, and then the market did climb up, and we did have a good chance like that. Another thing we're talking about with South America crops, come across Newswire this week that there was a lot of beans coming in, anywhere from 5 to 25% damaged, even more, even higher than that in some areas, and 18 to 25% moisture. You can't store an 18 to 25% moisture bean and not have major, major problems. So they're being out there, they're getting them in, they're cutting them wet. They don't have the facilities to dry those and get them on down. So we can see a little bit more back up on what their beans are going to do and why they're going to definitely need to import some more beans from the U.S. to blend with those to process them. You know, the meal market's falling off across the world. The basis is falling back. But we had a record crush this last month, the highest we've ever had for 1 month. Still very good crush margins. But basically, we're going to see trouble with Argentina keeping up with their crush and the quality of meal they have crushing those poor beans.
So the fundamentals out of South America, despite the size of the Brazilian bean crop, and maybe you can throw this in, but there are some real supply fundamentals that are supportive to the market, Argentina for soybeans and Brazil for corn.
Yeah, there's a swap there, but we saw another 132,000-ton bean sale this morning, whether that's Asia under the radar or maybe beans moving to Argentina to help meet world demand. But overall, we're seeing the world supply-demand balance shrink here and through here. This corn story is actually an old story. If you were lucky enough to be at a WIL meeting last winter, it was brought up that corn carryout in China could actually go to zero from this ethanol demand, feed demand, and so forth. However, those are public numbers. When you look at the private numbers within the government, it's much, much higher. So it'll be interesting to see if we learn those numbers. This week here, we were all concerned about trade. Chief Financial Officer Ray Young with ADM was at a meeting. He's with ADM there, and he talked about the two largest world economies getting through the trade dispute, but he sees opportunity for China to import additional ethanol. So I think the sleeper in through here is everybody's focused on beans. I think this ethanol long-term is the sleeper.
You wrote the word crush down. I take it you're talking about domestically because it has been on a rampage.
Oh, it's been really wild. I guess And, you know, we need to have something going on in order to support the bean price. Otherwise, we wouldn't be where we're at this stage of the game. But like Wayne said, the soy meal demand has slowed. We saw that on export sales today. We've seen the basis get poorer. But I was going to take a bounce back, Todd, and just talk a little bit about South America. It is really hard to get information out of South America, but CONAB came out, and they actually raised the corn crop in South America by 2.2 million metric tons. They went to 89.2. And in Argentina, they dropped it by a million metric tons. So they're like trading back and forth. You know, on beans, they're almost right on with the USDA, which is at 117 million metric tons. But on corn, on Argentina beans, they went down to 37 now, you know. So I think that so much is how much is in the market is the question that you have to ask yourself. We've been hearing about this, and you finally get to a point down there where a little bit of rain isn't going to help anymore. You know, and it isn't all over the country. That's the interesting part about Argentina. It's down in the Buenos Aires area. It's not in the northern part of Argentina. So you've got some balance going on there, too, and that's why I think we keep seeing these numbers moving around the way that they are.
So we've had, and I think I'll go across the board. We'll start here and go to Kurt to end with. We've had a couple of pretty rough weeks in the marketplace. We were really bullish at the end of a period that started, I don't know, late January. We were friendly, and then we began to get a whole lot more bullish. Is this just a leg up and then a setback as we move into the summer months, or are you looking at something different in your opinion?
Well, I assume you're talking for corn now or all markets?
All markets.
I think it's such a weird environment with this China trade issue. It's such an unknown that if you take that out of the equation, the price of beans, we closed, I believe, under the 200-day moving average today. It's going to just build momentum and more selling, and the funds are already long. Now, the problem is, if there's a quick resolution to this, and we wave a magic wand and everything's great and China's going to start taking our beans again, then beans are going to snap back 50 or 60 cents just on that news. I said earlier, I'm surprised so far that corn hasn't had a deeper break. And that just, I think, goes to show you that the market is highly focused on weather here and everywhere else and the demand issues we're talking about. So I wouldn't rule out a break in prices, especially if beans keep going with some fun selling. It's going to drag corn. And we really need the bean market. We need this trade thing to get figured out in beans to have any type of a bullish case in corn, because you're not going to have a situation, I don't think, where we're sitting with beans at 8.50 and corn at 5.25. I just don't see that happening. So one is going to definitely feed off the other. We really need this China thing, some certainty on that, so the market knows.
Cycle lows are due the end of the month, Todd. So, you know, and we moved on down here on Thursday. We've hit some support points. Will it be like every other time we've done over the last, since the report, that basically way down one day, oh, we recover the next, but it's a Friday. Fridays generally don't do that quite as well. I gambled and thought I was buying the lows on Thursday, so I'm really hoping for the bounce back. But, you know, all in all, I think that we've got a lot of moving parts. I think NAFTA is the big one. That is where our corn and beans and where we've got to keep it. It's right here close. China is a big deal, but there's only so many beans in the world, and we can go other places if Brazil sells all theirs to China. The corn number is where we really need to get NAFTA back online, and I think that's what we really need to work on. Something good happened. They took the one guy off that was sort of the hard-nosed guy with China off. They took him from going into the negotiations and put people in there that were ordered by Trump to let's make a deal. You know, and Monty Hall's our next guy we're going to send. So, you know, when we get to Monty Hall, we know things are going to be okay.
Especially seeing he's from Canada, right? You know, I mean, I think when you look at, from a technical standpoint, Elliott Wave hit the fifth wave on both corn and beans this week at the top, indicating that there would be a top considered to be in the market. And, you know, the funds certainly look at that type of thing.
Well, I think this China-U.S., it's going to take a while. I think they're more working on a save face approach, both two hard-nosed countries butting heads here. I don't believe they're going to come to a resolution the first time around. I believe both sides have made plans. They had plan B to get through maybe 60 days, maybe more. We'll see. But I have a feeling that it's just going to take a little time. As far as technically goes, I think, Wayne, we're due for some cyclical lows here as we move towards the end of the month. retracement levels are kicking in fairly well. If you look at the long-term chart here, we're actually looking at a yearly trend line coming up from last January and so forth, support underneath the mark in the beans about another dime lower. Whether that holds or not, we're fixing to find out. But the trade's dialed in at $10. We could run up to $10.50 real quick, or else we could probably drop down to $9.50.
Wayne Nelson, I want to talk a little bit about NAFTA since you mentioned this. This week, Secretary Perdue said, you know, NAFTA's not going as well as I thought it was. I think that that's because we've been busy with China. That sounded like a little bit of a spin, but NAFTA's not going so well. Congress, in order to get any kind of agreement done, was maybe supposed to have that NAFTA agreement, or at least the principles of it, in place by the time we recorded this program. How much danger is there with the NAFTA? Now, because I'm thinking about some of the things that Dan Zwicker has told us about trucks that go and trains that go across the border often, and that, you know, this is the number one export market for U.S. corn.
There is problems, and I mean, we're looking at a Mexican election with a guy that's not friendly America is leading the polls right now, and that is a problem. I do think that for logicalness on both sides that this should happen again. The big deal in the real standoff, I believe, is in car parts and wages in the Mexican factories. And they're not going to get them to raise their rates down there, because then that would offset the whole bit. That's, you know, so we've got to get a little more understanding to how the Mexican government and the country is working a little bit. But I think this can be straightened around. It's just a shame it wasn't done, cleared, and before Congress goes home and before we have a new Mexican government. But it will be worked out, because we're not going to let that market fall apart. And I don't think that their trade negotiators are going to let it fall apart. Will we get everything we want? No. But, I mean, we need to get in and get it done. We're going to get something. It's going to be better than it was.
Well, you know, I always find it interesting. Will we get everything we want is a really good question. But what weren't we getting before is the bigger question, as far as I'm concerned, especially in the ag markets. I mean, none of us have any idea, actually, what that NAFTA program is all about. And it's been pretty apparent. You know, we're afraid we're going to lose something. We have no idea what we've already lost and what's been given away due to this program. So it'll be interesting to find out what Congress really does. We never know the inner workings. But I've attended enough USDA forum meetings. I sat at some of those trade meetings in the USDA, and it is unbelievable what we as a country give away and how unfair the trade situation is between us, where we're getting 6% and they're charging us 30%. And things like that. So, you know, as individual people who listen to the media, you know, and the media is going to get on board, there's no question about that. I think we also have to be very careful about poo-pooing the whole thing and saying that renegotiated isn't a good thing. We just don't know what we weren't getting before.
Corn planting, soybean planting wrapping up in the nation, or will be fairly soon. Corn planting pretty close, or getting closer. Soybean, maybe a couple of weeks. But as farmers come out of the field, you've gone through your winter marketing part of the plan. What should they be doing and looking forward to now?
Well, we've been basically using some scale-up selling approach. Has some orders above the market, and you know, corn's gone up to some levels, beans have gone up to some levels to do that. Then, with the uncertainty in front of us, what we've done is taken the approach, put in a $4 floor and a $10 floor, and just see what happens. You're covered. If market moves higher, you got opportunity to make some sales higher. You don't have to worry about overpricing bushels. So we want to take a KISS approach. Keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah, I have that taped on my monitor, KISS. I try to live by that, so I agree with that 100%. It's easier said than done sometimes, though. We've kind of taken the approach all along, even before this China stuff. It's easier to make a bullish case for corn than beans, be more aggressive on beans. Hopefully farmers have been able to do that well north of $10 on new crop. So I think at this level, I don't know if I just jump right out and do much more than puts, but hopefully farmers are somewhere well north of a third sold, and in addition to that, having some sort of put coverage on. Corn, we've been just making light sales here, you know, in the 415, 420 zone. We're being a little bit patient on corn, being more aggressive on beans, because beans are the key. Like I said before, if beans wash out to $8, it's going to drag corn with it. So let's be more aggressive and hope we're wrong on beans.
You know, we're 40 to 50, some guys stronger in the beans. We've done that. We started $10 on the board. We worked up to $10.50. We had a lot of orders at $10.60 that, of course, did not get filled. You know, we're seeing farmers sit back right now. They are not wanting to hedge a lot of anything with the setback in prices. I think we go back to $10.50, $10.40, $10.60 in the range. We'll see farmers be ready to sell again. Everybody's been a little bit hesitant on corn. We're probably in the 20-25% there. And we're looking, as we get over to 425 to the 450 bracket, we're going to be adding to our corn sales on some that way. But we're going to not probably go over 50% on the corn. So that's what we're looking at.
Yep. Well, we've taken the same approach in terms of putting a floor in and saying, let's find out what's going on. We have sold calls above the market to be able to finance the floor, you know, with the idea that if we get to that call and we get exercised, we'd be happy to be short corn, let's say at 460, 470, 480, somewhere in that neighborhood. And so on beans, we've got a lot of 1060 puts put in place from a long time ago. And so, you know, we feel comfortable with where we are. I think that, you know, we've got to let this thing play out and see once what the weather actually does and what the rest of the world does.
Let's get a final word from each of you. We'll start with you, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities.
Well, besides $12 beans and $6 corn, I think you got to look at opportunity if you want to be a speculator. And the most undervalued commodity that's got the most upside potential now and long term is soybean oil. If you can buy soybean oil down in the upper 20-something, I think that's dollars in your back pocket.
Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing?
Yeah, I'd take probably the opposite approach. I feel like I say this every time I'm on the show. Have a plan. We know there's going to be huge volatility, especially with all this NAFTA-China news. But have a plan. The markets, Kurt mentioned it, beans could easily go 50 cents lower, 50 cents higher. But what are you going to do when it does? If you don't have a plan, you're going to be handcuffed by that volatility. So have a plan based on your break-evens and cost of production, and execute that plan when the market allows.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Well, they're discussing the farm bill in Washington, D.C., and there's one idiot out there that wants to be cutting crop insurance, the APLC and ARC and all the government programs 10% a year for the next 10 years till we go down to zero. Let's call all of your representatives in Washington and let them know that we'd like them to protect agriculture.
And Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson.
Well, you know that I believe in having a plan. There's no question about that. One of the things I think you have to be prepared for right now is that, you know, the Dow Jones doesn't offer as many opportunities as it had been. So we have a lot more people who had been in the Dow that are now back over here in our market. And that's why you, when there's opportunity there, you have to take advantage of it.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org. It's public radio for the farming world. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson, Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, and from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, Chip Nellinger. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.